Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour with your host, Jenny Seek.
Hi, folks. This is Jenny Seek, and this is your weekly forum for connecting with your intuitive process, all things metaphysical, and honoring and recognizing your soul self. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the ride.
Hi there, everybody. Thanks for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour and spending your Tuesday evening with us. For folks who are new listeners, I just want to tell you a little bit about what this show is about and what you can expect to hear on it. This is a forum for people who are interested in connecting with their inner depths, their unconscious, and connecting with the energy that when we pull forth really lets us access something called our calling, what we're meant to do, what our gifts are here, what gifts we're here to share with people. Often in our culture, we focus a lot on vocation, and that can make us frustrated in our lives if we follow the voices outside of ourselves as opposed to the voices inside of ourselves. So it's my goal to have folks on who are interested in creating a dialogue between the unconscious and the conscious and pulling that energy forward. So if you've done that, or if you're interested in doing that through connecting with your intuition, connecting with your higher self, your soul self, your imagination, you're definitely in the right place. I want to encourage you to share your shiny, pretty picture with us so that we know you're following the show and so you'll get updates on what is coming up on Inner Voice in the near future. I really have to get to work because I normally have a lot of guests that are scheduled far out, and now I don't. So I really have to get creative and ask some folks to be on Inner Voice, and so I'll be doing that in the coming week. I want to introduce my guest now. Periodically, Inner Voice has a feature where they have folks on who have followed their inner voice, who have listened to that deep calling and heard its resonance and started to change their life around that. And tonight I'm really excited to have Mindy Early on. Mindy is out of, I believe, Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, Mindy? Which one?
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, awesome. She's out of Philadelphia, and she works with youth to help them to identify for themselves who they are and what their inner calling is about. She works with a drama group, is that right? A drama club? Or can you, why don't you just talk about that, Mindy, since you probably can do a better job than me.
sure, absolutely. For the past almost 10 years now, I've worked in a field called educational theater, first with a regional theater company, and now I work for a nonprofit organization, which is just a theater education organization. And we partner with teachers and with schools and with classrooms to use playwriting as a medium to, of course, enhance literacy skills. But the other part of it, and the part that we've really been exploring lately, is using playwriting as a mechanism for, as you said, to help a student, whether they're in third grade or in 12th grade or anywhere in between, find their voice and mind themselves through various activities to figure out how they would like to use that voice, what story they would like to tell, and then we mentor them through the playwriting process so that by the end of the residency, they have a complete one-act play, or sometimes they just write a scene, but whatever it is, they've told a story that communicates something that they're passionate about.
That's so awesome. I think that we so need that in our school system. And, you know, I think that we need those ways to connect with our own deep myth-making, our own stories, so that we have more of a sense of what our identity is about, what our calling is. And I just think that's such wonderful work that you're doing. And I hope that it's being done in other places. Is it like a pilot program, or how did you get involved in it, Mindy?
Well, that's sort of two questions. The first one, the founder of the organization, which is called Philadelphia Young Playwrights, actually met with the founder of an organization called Young Playwrights, Inc. in New York that she had heard about, and she learned about that model and then brought it to Philadelphia. I think we were one of the earlier playwriting organizations, but I do know that there are similar programs now in Baltimore and D.C. There's one in California. There's a large one in Florida. So peppered across the country now, there are quite a few young playwrights programs. How I got involved with educational theater is one of those serendipity stories, I feel like. I had been hired as what's called a directing fellow for the regional theater company that I used to work for. And that fellowship was essentially assistant directing all of the main stage productions and doing a couple of other directing-oriented projects and just integrating with the culture of a professional theater company. And this was my first year fresh out of grad school, so this was my really first professional experience. And it just so happened that the same time I was starting at the company, they had just hired for the first time for them a director of education to start building an educational program. So about midway through my my directing fellowship, Maureen had asked me if I would like to come out to the classroom and see what doing school-based workshops were like. And I said, sure. And I went in and I witnessed, they taught at least three during the day for three different classes. And we were on our way out of the school, and I remember us walking down the hallway and the teacher running out of her room and saying that her class was coming to see the show that we were prepping students for too, and could they do one more workshop? And Maureen and her associate at the time, who'd been doing the workshops, looked at each other, and there was just like exhaustion painted all over their faces, and that they didn't know if they could, they had it in them to do another one, and it just popped out of my mouth where I just said, well, I've been watching, I'll do it. And Maureen looked at me, and she said, really? And I said, yeah, I'll do it. And I went in and I followed their lesson plan that I had witnessed three times that day. And then not only that, I found myself opening up and making adjustments based on the feedback that students were giving me. I remember taking an activity in a completely different direction than Maureen had. And when we walked out, Maureen just said to me, my God, this is, you're a natural at this. And that's sort of how I fell into that path. And the more I started teaching and working with students and creating theater with students in this field called teaching artistry, which I didn't even know existed until I had met Maureen, I just found myself so excited and energized by the limitless creativity that young people are capable of if you just provide a safe, creative environment for them to explore that creativity. And I found myself more energized walking out of a school than I did when I was walking out of a professional rehearsal for a professional show. So
wow,
I just sort of, So I just started following that fork in the road, you know, following what was really feeding me energetically and created a whole different life path than I expected I would ever walk.
I think that's so amazing. I think it takes so much courage and, you know, being in the present to be able to embrace that kind of energy and just noticing that there's a need to fill and that there you are and that you find yourself there, and that willingness to just embrace the unknown and create something new. And I think it's something that our culture really, really needs, and that you're probably, by doing the work you're doing and modeling that for the kids that you work with, helping them to be able to do that as well.
That's what our hope is, that, you know, we talk a lot about wanting to give the students we work with a sense of confidence, of agency. Unfortunately, right now, in the current educational climate, there's such an emphasis on teaching to the test, on getting the right answer. You know, I can't tell you how many classrooms, and it really breaks my heart, how many classrooms I walk into, and, you know, your first session with them is just spent doing activities to help them give a answer and to know that all answers are correct within the creative sphere, because some of the classrooms I work with, there's so much pressure that the students are absolutely afraid to give a answer because it's always a yes or no scenario. So
right, and they might get it wrong.
The leadership that comes out of these students after they've been through this creative process, whether they continue to write plays or they never write a play again, you know, at least they walk away knowing that they have a voice, that their opinions matter, that it's safe to explore those opinions and those passions,
mm-hmm.
and it's
mm-hmm.
safe to tell others about those opinions and passions. We have a number of students who use our program to tell people things for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we have in our monologue festival this year a young woman who wrote a monologue about her life having a brother, an older brother with severe autism. And when we first received the monologue, you know, the line, "I just need somebody to tell me that these feelings are okay." And nobody
mm-hmm.
has, you know,
wow.
just sort of jumped off the page at us. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, so this writing, you know, this creative process really helps them feel that they can, you know, through an art form, express something that they're just not comfortable expressing otherwise in a lot of cases.
That's awesome. And probably something that they wouldn't maybe have such access to, you know, have access to their emotions in that way. But like you're saying, through an art form, they're able to reach it in a different way.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's awesome. So what population does your program serve, Mindy?
We serve a wide breadth of populations. We work with, we work closely with the School District of Philadelphia, so we are in a lot of low-income neighborhoods, working with a lot of neighborhood schools, but we also work with some private schools, and we also work with suburban schools in the area. So
mm-hmm.
we have a pretty large palette, and when we do specialized residencies or when we do our summer program, one of the things we always strive to do is to bring the students from all those different areas together.
That's awesome.
Because, you know, again, when we're all coming together to work on something creative, we're all equal,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and we're not worried about what school we've come from or what neighborhood we've come from. And actually, when we started work at the for this past monologue festival, normally, historically in the past, we've started off the day having the students introduce themselves and then introduce what school they're from, and then, you know, just serendipitously, we forgot to do that this year, and my
mm-hmm.
colleague and I talked about it, and we decided that we were never going to put the pressure on them of having to name where they're from again, just because
wow.
it's, I think it's so liberating to not even have to, unless you want to volunteer it.
To not have that be the focus.
You know, exactly, exactly.
Wow, that's wonderful. I'll bet that, you know, that kind of interface with people who are different, so different, you know, regardless of socioeconomic class or race, and a lot of people probably have not had that experience prior to your program. You know what I mean?
Very true, especially true in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is
yeah.
a very neighborhood-oriented area.
Mm-hmm.
Even some of my husband's friends who are in their mid-20s now very rarely will go into the city proper, and we live sort of on the outskirts, almost in the suburbs, but we're still a Philadelphia zip code, you know. So in our general neighborhood, a lot of the people here never go into the actual center city or old city or university city area, and it's the same vice versa. We've actually had some students in the past who have really wanted to come to one of our Saturday programs that we offer at our office building. But, you know, this particular student was crying because he was just so, the act of leaving his neighborhood was so
mm-hmm.
emotional for him and then huge. So a lot of times, especially when a student was in eighth grade, so when they're that age, you know, those borders are very clearly defined.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be true all the way up through high school, too.
Wow, that's awesome. Do you guys have a particular theme for the playwriting, or do you let them just kind of go off on their own and come up with their own theme, or how does that work?
How we structure the residency, we actually are one of the arts ed organizations in Philadelphia who don't have a prescribed curriculum. What we have is a framework that we ask our teaching artists to follow, which is just the framework essentially mirrors the playwriting process and breaks it down so that it's safe and successful for students to create. So for those first, we say 3 to 5 sessions, depending on how long the residency is, what we'll do is we'll do various brainstorming, idea-generating activities, we call them. We'll bring in music, sometimes we'll bring in props or pictures, or we'll work with them through acting and improvisational exercises. And we encourage the teaching artists to do at least 3 very different activities, because first of all, that is working with learners of different strengths. So visual learner, I'm very excited by, you know, a picture versus just a prompt or even an acting exercise that might be a little less tangible. But we do also do those exercises and just help them as a class just generate tons and tons of ideas, because we as an organization do not censor our students in any way. And it's our preference to not prescribe a theme to them. Sometimes the teachers we work with, there'll be a very general theme, like the teachers we'll ask to work with a theme of change or something like that. But that's a very broad topic. It's a broad stroke topic that has a lot of entry points. So, but at the core of our program, we don't want to limit the student's voice in any way, shape, or form. So if a student writes a play that has a violent moment in it, or that's about a very hot button issue, as some of them do, we as an organization encourage that, and we as an organization, if we do a reading or a stage production of their piece, we'll do the piece absolutely as written. And then of course within the school environment, we work with the teacher for establishing how that works in the classroom that's comfortable for that teacher, and you know, that teacher's obligation to the school codes and parental codes. So sometimes a teacher will give that same creative freedom on the page, but at the end of the year celebration, if the student's play is selected to have a showcase within the school, language might be taken out, or, you know, certain scenes might not be depicted within the school environment.
Sure, sure. Well, so do you work? You work in conjunction with the classroom teachers then in this program?
We do, and that we call the partnership between the teacher and the teaching artist, the theater professional, that comes to their classroom and artistic team, where they work together. The idea is that through our program and through these, the sharing and learning of the activities that we bring to the classroom, the teacher's also getting professional development. And the teacher is able to see new ways in to not just to writing, but, you know, there might be an application of a way to adapt an exercise that we did for playwriting that uses music towards another project or assignment, you know. So the hope is that the teacher will, you know, borrow, shop, steal our activities, and when he or she can, also apply them back to the classroom environment themselves.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I think it's so important right now when we're seeing, like, a kind of a return in some of the schools to, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and away from more creative ways of, you know, communicating. I think that the work you're doing is so invaluable, because you're helping kids figure out what's important for them and what's important for them to say, and how to think on their own, you know, on their own playing field, so to speak. And I don't think that that's a skill that a lot of of classrooms are, you know, are encouraging kids to do anymore, you know, like you're talking about teaching to the test and stuff. Like everything is so by rote that, you know, there isn't room for creativity, there isn't room for expansion and expression, which is how people, you know, connect with what's really true for them, what truth looks like for them and what their value system looks like.
Absolutely. And the really unfortunate trend that we are doing the best we can and teachers that we work with are doing the best that they can is a lot of our teachers really want the program in their class. They fight tooth and nail to have the program in the class, but because for them it's become, if they can get it in their classroom, the one time during the week, you know, when they have a little creative leeway and they can bring something creative to their students instead of their reality, which, you know, even they do not want to exist in, where they have to be
right
on this page of the curriculum with this objective written on the board, or, you know, in case somebody walks in the room, who will write them up for not teaching towards
right
that exact thing. So the hopeful thing is that the city of Philadelphia has a new superintendent of schools, and they're really reconfiguring what the district looks like. And in that reconfiguring, they're considering organizations like ours to be a large part of that process to try to bring the arts back into schools.
That's wonderful.
Yes, acknowledging that, you know, now more than ever, as you said, these students need a vehicle to, you know, first of all, even just start to explore what they
mm-hmm
think about their neighborhood or their city or, you know, their state or their country or their world, you know, and then mm-hmm to have the opportunity to voice that too.
Wow, that's just really, really inspiring. And it's really exciting for me to hear that that's going on, because you hear in the news, you hear in the media so much, you know, of the legislating of, you know, the way that everything has to be done, like, you know, this kind of legalistic legislation around everything. And you hear that those are the trends. And it's so important, I think, to counterbalance that with, like, the very, very creative, wonderful energies coming out of communities, which we don't hear so much about because the media is so biased toward the negative. So I think that's just wonderful
mm-hmm
that you're doing that work and that you're providing that space for people, for kids, you know, to explore and all of that. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very cool. So I also wanted to talk to you about, you know, what you do in the night, because this is kind of your daytime shtick. This is, you know, this is part of it, but it isn't your entire calling. I know that you have started a really, really wonderful business making herbal products, and I want you to share more with the listeners about how that came to be and how that came to be part of, you know, what your calling looked like in the world.
Sure, absolutely. I come from a very conservative, mainstream sort of family environment.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think earlier if I could think of a single household remedy that was handed down to me from either my parents or my aunt and uncle or my grandparents or anybody, and I couldn't think of any, not even something as simple as, you know, using toothpaste to polish silver.
Uh-huh.
You know, there just
wow
wasn't a, I know, this wasn't a culture of that at all while I was growing up, and so, you know, it was all reliant on manufactured products and cleaners and foods. We had so much processed food in the house, and there just wasn't a sense of natural awareness, and there wasn't even a sense of a food palate beyond standard American food. So I didn't know what hummus was until I went to college, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are things like that. So, you know, and that's just the environment that my parents were raised in. That's just sort of what I was born into. you know, and when I hit high school, for some reason, well, not for some reason, I think it was my spiritual interest in exploring different religions, and that included Wicca, which sort of steered me down a path of learning more about plants.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time that I just felt really interested in pursuing an all-natural thing, and I was sort of the solo person in my world that was even thinking that you could use rosemary to treat a cough or something like that. But it was just something that I held on to, and it just continued to develop over the years. And then, but it didn't really blossom until January in 2011. Just that transition, at the end of that, at the end of 2010, I had the final week off before the new year and did a lot of meditation and a lot of soul searching, and just somehow the message came through to start the new year trying one step at a time to do something all natural, to try to really commit to shedding all of those chemical things. And it was related to my desire, my husband's desire for us to start a family within the next year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started thinking forward to using cleaners around the house with the baby and things like that. So my mission was that one step at a time, I would start just shedding all of the chemical-related things in my life. And that's been my journey since 2011 to this very day. It's been a very serendipitous journey, just like starting my teaching artist work within my other career path, where I would be searching for one thing and instead pop up, something else would pop up, like the idea of using no shampoo anymore
mm-hmm.
on your hair. Which is something that was totally a world that I didn't even realize. I had this sort of very, very, very oily hair that you had to wash every day, or it just became absolutely unbearable. And then I'd go to the hairdresser, and they'd tell me that my hair was dry. And I just never understood that for years and years until this article that came my way that said that store-bought chemical-based shampoos strip the moisture of your hair.
Mm-hmm.
So your scalp and your body, of course, is trying to make up for that difference. And that's why hair becomes so oily, because it's been trained by your shampooing regimen to produce the oils that your shampooing is taking away.
Right.
So that was my first very, very big all-natural experiment. And, it, you know, it, to me, I give that as the example a lot of time for why I decided to call my company A Step in the Natural Direction, and
mm-hmm.
why I personally advocate for taking a slow pace and a slow journey and invoking patience. Because when you switch your hair from one regimen to another, it takes time for
sure.
your body to relearn what's going on. So for me, I was reading that it could take anywhere from 3 to 6 months. And I don't think it took quite as long for my hair to relearn the basic structure. But, you know, I provide it as an example, because if your hair is going through this huge transition and your body's oils and chemistry is literally shifting and changing, adding a large dietary change where you decide to cut out caffeine at the same time, is probably not the best idea, because
mm-hmm.
your body's already changing, you're already releasing toxins, readjusting, and then to add the withdrawal symptoms and the additional release of something as simple as removing caffeine is a lot. And I think that's why a lot of people, when they try to adopt many things at once or go cold turkey or do a gigantic lifestyle change all at once, you know, they try it and they get frustrated. They feel awful, and then
right,
they feel
like
extra
New Year's
awful.
Resolution.
Right, exactly. You know, they feel
totally
awful. Yeah, because
right.
they, you know, they failed, you know. And so I think there's something to be said for just, you know, taking it easy, for adopting a new change, for seeing how that works, seeing how your body changes, you know, and then just holistically finding the natural next step for you.
I think that's so wonderful, because I think our culture is so focused on product, and I think you're talking about being focused on your process, you know, slowing down, noticing how you respond, noticing what comes to the surface and what's true for you, and that it's a different way of living and a different way of approaching these questions, and it's a way that you can live in as opposed to, you know, try to catch up to, you know?
Absolutely. That's really what I tell people is, you know, there's really no order to how you do things. You know, you could start with your diet, you can start with exercise, or you can start with, you know, changing your personal hygiene products. And whichever way in is the right way in, because
right.
That's the way you're being guided to start. So that's
awesome.
Probably what you need the most at that
mm-hmm.
point in time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you'll just keep receiving guidance from there.
That's wonderful. It's wonderful that you're so open and that you do that not just in, you know, in terms of the way that you work with these products and you know, sell them and, you know, connect with other people that way, but you do it in your work as well. It's just, it's a wonderful example. I'm really inspired. I knew when I read your bio that what you're doing is really, really holistic. You know, it's a really holistic model. It's a model that is doable long term and that you can feel good about long term. I think that so much of our whole you know, metaphysical culture is so wham bam thank you man, that's so pull a rabbit out of a hat. There's no room often for people to, you know, show up on their own terms and do things in their own way. And I just really, really admire the way that you're approaching these questions.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, something else that's really important to me that I think I carried over from my teaching work, apparently when I was 5 years old, I told my mother my very first time that I ever said what I wanted to be when I grew up. I told her I wanted to be a bridge builder.
Oh,
and
wow.
She always said that to me as, like, you picked the strangest. I've never in my life heard of a child saying they wanted to be a bridge builder. And I think, I don't remember telling her that, but I think the reason for it was we used to take family vacations to the Jersey Shore, which involved going over this gigantic, beautiful bridge that
uh-huh.
literally bridged where we were coming from over to the beach. And for me,
uh-huh.
that was so magical that I wanted to be the person to build those sort of magical bridges that would take people, you know, from one place where they are to the next place where they want to go. And
wow.
I was journaling a few months ago, and the prompt was to think back to that first career and then to try to relate it to your present life to see what you could find there.
Uh-huh.
And I started off the journal entry saying, oh, yeah, well, I wanted to be a bridge builder, and obviously I'm not. And then I paused.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, well, wait a minute. I actually
totally
lived my life. That's,
yeah.
I am a bridge builder, and that's what's so incredibly important to me is, to me, it's not just about trying to sell the products that I've developed. Actually, it came
mm-hmm.
in the reverse, where I was sharing knowledge. You know, when I discovered soap nuts, which are a fruit that's related to the goji berry that you can use to wash your laundry, that's absolutely chemical free and hypoallergenic.
What's
and
the
safe
fruit?
To use
I didn't
on,
hear what you said.
It's called a soap nut.
Silk or soap?
Soap.
Uh-huh.
A soap nut.
Uh-huh.
And even though it's called a soap nut, it's not
mm-hmm.
a nut. It's a fruit
mm-hmm.
that's
wow.
been used in the East to clean laundry for ages. And that was another
wow.
one of my accidental discoveries. I was looking for I think the soap, I was trying to buy the soap wort plant, and then I was like, what's a soap nut? And I clicked on it. And so I bought some to try myself because I didn't want to use detergent anymore on my laundry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually the thing that I started just saying to anybody who would listen. It was, oh, my God, mm-hmm. there are these things called soap nuts, and you can reuse them. And so much, you know, it's so much cheaper than regular detergent, and it's all natural. And so I would just try to spread that knowledge. And, you know, I started a Facebook page where I post all these tips and tricks as I find them because I know how much time it takes me to do this sort of research. So I like to be the, you know, the one that just sort of spouts the fruits of the labor, hoping that, you know, if at least one person is like, oh, I'll try that, you know, then that's wonderful to me. So to
right.
me, it's about, you know, knowledge. And I very openly share what ingredients are in my products. And if somebody, you know, either reads my product listing through my website or on Facebook or on Etsy, and they're like, oh, I have those ingredients, I can make that, I think that's great. And I think
awesome.
That they should.
That's
you know,
awesome.
They absolutely should. Because to me, it really doesn't matter whether they purchase it through me. That's sort of, you know, a secondary thing. And I'm happy to be that conduit because, again, you know, we're all living very busy lives. And not a lot of us have time to make our own deodorant or to make lotion or
right.
to make lip balm or all of those things. So I'm happy to be the person that you purchase from if you don't have the time to do that, because Lord knows I purchase some finished all-natural things myself.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, I really feel so strongly through that teaching aspect that I have that it's really just about sharing knowledge and building community and sharing these experiences and trying to rebuild the culture that we lost through the
mm-hmm.
industrial age and the manufacturing age, where all of this knowledge existed before mass manufacturing. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, people like my parents who, you know, grew up as sort of like the children of the first manufacturing decade, I feel like, where their parents didn't have to think about how you can use baking soda and vinegar to clean anymore because they could just go to the store and buy Windex or Lysol.
Right.
Yeah, it's sort of, I'm trying to swing the pendulum back to, no, let's create the community that reminds each other that you can use baking
yeah.
soda for about 40 different things around the house and how cheap that is and how it doesn't
yeah.
have chemicals in it.
And also then it was attached to the idea that women had money and that people had money to go out and buy these products. So it was kind of sold to them as like they were not, you know, the ways that they had done things, the ways that were tried and true were something that were underneath them. And I think that's the way that it
absolutely
kind of got sold to them as a bill of goods.
Absolutely.
Gave too much
right.
power to these corporations to just kind of, you know, control everything and even control the way we think about things. There was this really great book called The Hidden Persuaders, and it was all about that whole idea that, you know, are you really creating an alternative or are you selling something back to someone that they had to begin with, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So in the era of when we first had leisure time for the first time ever,
right.
you know, and that, yeah, and that cultural mentality, you know, why would you have a jar of vinegar on your counter that has grapefruit peels in it, you know, and that you're going to add baking soda to clean your counter when you have the money to just go buy Ajax,
right.
you know, which we're
right.
telling you is better, you know,
well,
and I think. Go ahead.
There's something, too, about, like, just the natural connection. I just got a recipe for taking, coarse sea salt and grapefruit juice and cleaning. It makes an abrasive, and it's citrus. It's really, really good, and it's got that acidic quality, and it's great to, like, clean all your fixtures and stuff, and it smells
mm-hmm.
wonderful. I mean, it smells wonderful,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you want to clean, you know, as opposed to kind of these noxious chemical smells that make you want to lie down or get out of the room, you know, that sort of
right,
thing.
Right, or you can't
yeah.
breathe.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yes.
And the interesting thing about, you know, in my products, I know some well, you can't really call them all natural, but, I mean, sometimes on the shelves, I mean, that's the interesting caveat, is when you're in the store and you're looking for all natural products, you know, there's no regulations really that,
right.
you know, or they're very loose what all natural
yes.
is.
And right,
by
and
FDA
getting
regulation,
all the time. Yes.
Right, right. And by FDA regulation, they don't have to list, especially if it's fragrance-oriented, they don't have to list where that fragrance comes from. So fragrance oils are largely synthetic. So when we think we're buying
a
lilac air freshener, like that actually has chemicals in it, but what chemicals we don't know because they're not required to list those chemicals on the label. So, you know, why not use something like the remedy that you talked about? That's, you know, it's sea salt, you know, it's grapefruit juice,
right.
and that's all it is, and it smells absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and it makes you feel more part of the process, you know, like, oh, I
absolutely.
You know, squeezed this grapefruit juice, and now I'm going to go clean my bathtub. It just feels better the whole way around. It feels kind of kitchen witchy and homegrown, and it's just, it makes cleaning fun as opposed to something that feels foreign or you know, that you don't know exactly what you're saying, that you don't know what the products are made of or what that process is all about. And increasingly, I mean, I guess part of it is getting older, and I guess maybe you get a little bit more, you know, stuck in your ways or something like that as you get older. But part of it is also just that, you know, one of the ways that you can feel a sense of change in your life is to control some of those things, to make some of those choices on a conscious level for yourself and for your family. And you know, maybe if you can't do, like, a huge, you know, create a revolution or whatever from the outside, you can do these smaller things, and you can make conscious choices to do things differently, and that's empowering.
Absolutely, and it really does take a sense of openness, which I think I just have always had, largely because of my work in theater, you know, where you just, you know, you open yourself up to play the parts that you have to play or to jump into the activities that you have to jump into. So I really just, you know, have this try it and see spirit. And
mm-hmm.
I've noticed that, you know, it's a lot harder for some people to cultivate that spirit.
Yeah.
One of my favorite remedies that I get the craziest looks over is the different ways that you can use onions to fight a cold. So I'm trying
uh-huh.
to shake a cold right now. And
right.
instead of taking anything medicinal, anything over-the-counter, anything pharmaceutical, you know, I've been doing various things, but one of those includes how you can slice up slivers of an onion, and it's not the most attractive thing in the world, but when you stick them up your nose, the antibacterial, the antiviral properties of that onion will actually decongest your nose naturally.
That's
and
awesome.
It will stay decongested for a while. And
mm-hmm.
to me, that's, first of all, I mean, how amazing to just have to go in my kitchen and slice an onion and that's it. But then,
well,
you know, second
magical.
Of all,
you know,
because
you feel like you're, it feels magical because it's like you're connected
well, right.
to your body and you're doing something, you're ingesting something, you can, you know, communicate with the onion. I think it sounds a little cheesy, but you can, you know what I mean? As
yes,
opposed to
absolutely.
Something that just comes from outside and you have no idea what it is, you have to believe that it's going to heal you. And that's a big
mm-hmm.
piece. That's a big thing to step over to begin with, because I think a lot of times a lot of those things do more harm than good. And,
right.
And so you can work with the energies of nature and heal yourself, you know, and that's empowering.
Absolutely. And it's tied to that same thing of, I know what's decongesting my nose if it's just
mm-hmm.
an onion, like you said, versus if I take an over-the-counter decongestant, it's working, but at the price of literally drying out my body.
Yeah,
so it's not
yeah.
just drying out my nose, it's drying out my entire body during a time when fluids are really important to my body.
Right.
You know, so
right.
why take something that's going to dry you out when you need fluids when there's this other way? Or I know some other people will use the neti pot method of the salt
mm-hmm.
water up the nose. I actually personally think the onions work better, but that's just me. But, you know, why not use something like that where you can, you know, commune with it, you know it's working, and you know it's not, there's no price to it working.
Right.
Like there can be.
Absolutely. Very, very cool. So I know that you have a website on Etsy, and you I posted one of your pictures. I was able to post one of your pictures of one of your products on the page. You offer all different kinds of products. I noticed laundry soap. And you said something about shampoo and not using it anymore. What do you do in lieu of that? How do you do that?
I haven't created my own shampoo yet.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I use Dr. Bronner's Castile soap.
Mm-hmm.
And I only do that every few days now, and actually, you know, talk about how long a process and how you have to be in tune with your body to adjust. My hair has basically started telling me that it doesn't even need that very much
awesome.
Anymore,
mm-hmm.
which is great. That's actually the ideal. What I use on a daily basis is actually a hair rinse that is lavender and rosemary that's steeped in water and vinegar and a little bit of borax, which sounds very strange, but it's a natural mineral compound. And, you know, apple cider vinegar is another one of those things that can be used for a plethora of things.
Everything under the sun. Yeah.
Yeah. Including cleaning your hair and balancing the pH of your hair and the oils in your hair and all of that, while, you know, the rosemary and the lavender are antibacterial. They help clean it but also strengthen it and soften it. And so I use a little bit of that on my hair every day now, and that's really all it needs besides being shampooed once a week.
And you just dump it over it and then catch it and then dump it again? Or do you actually try to suds it up? I know that it doesn't have sudsing agents. So do you just rub it in, or do you just dump it on, and how do you do that?
I do a little bit. You know, I pour it on, and then I do like a little bit of a massage. I usually do it at the start of the shower, and then I do a very brief rinse at the end of the shower. But honestly, you don't need to rinse it out at all if you don't want to. The slight vinegar smell, if you can even smell it at all, fades away when your hair dries. So the floral, you know, herbal scent is the thing that remains. But I just, you know, talk about steps in a natural direction. My habit, I just can't quite break my habit of rinsing my hair
right.
before I get out of the shower. So, you know, I just let myself do it. That's why I do a very brief one, because my hope is that I'm rinsing it a little bit, but that some of it's staying in my hair.
I'm laughing because when I was in high school, I got really into, these Jeannie Rose herbals, and she made all these beauty products and things and talked about, like, how there's this huge sudsing agent in all of the shampoos, and so we expect all the suds on our hair, like, you know, like lots and lots of suds, but that doesn't clean it at all. And so I used to make herbal concoctions and dump it over my hair in the backyard in high school. And it's just, it's funny because, I mean, my parents made me take it out into the backyard to do it. So that's why I did it that way as opposed to in the house. But it sounds like we'd have some stories to share. But it's just funny because you're inspiring me to try that again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's wonderful. And just that connection with nature, you know, is just so wonderful. And it's something that we miss in our culture because, you know, there's indoors and outdoors and never do the twin meets.
Right, you know, and talking about, you know, the joy of communing with what you're using, you know,
mm-hmm.
the hair rinse is something that's so, you know, again, I sell it, but that's also so easy to make yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I have 2 lavender plants and 2 rosemary bushes, and like there's
mm-hmm.
nothing more satisfying to me and more joyful, you know. And it, you know, it may sound silly, but you know, when I'm sniffing lavender and rosemary, and I always thank the plants for, you know, what they're giving, it really does feel like I'm helping to care for the earth by
mm-hmm.
using something that's cleaning my body that I literally just harvested from my own yard, you know, that from a plant that's still living, that's going to continue giving, you know, and then going in and making it in my kitchen, you know, which is why I encourage people, you know, to do the easy things themselves, because my kitchen, whenever I make the hair rinse, smells like the most magical kitchen in the world.
I'm sure.
And it's better than any air freshener that you could possibly imagine, you know. So just the fact that, and it's so empowering just to, you know, to know that you're making something that is not just cleansing your body, but helping to take care of it in a really meaningful way. You know, the fact that I don't, you know, it's been about 2 years now and I don't use anything on my body that I don't make myself. Besides toothpaste is my last one, but I just haven't had the time to figure out how to concoct toothpaste yet. But you know, everything else, and just to go through my morning regimen, you know, using products that I'm making myself, that, you know, I knew what it was like making those products, I know every ingredient and all of that, it's just a really wonderful feeling.
Well, it's like you're part of nature as opposed to, you know, outside of it. I mean, that's
absolutely
a powerful thing. Absolutely. Very cool. So I want to ask you, like, how these two things, do they interface? Do they combine these pieces of your life with, you know, the theater piece that you're working on and the playwriting with your students, and then also all of this back to nature stuff? Have you noticed that they combine in some ways or that they inform each other?
I definitely feel that my spirit of sharing information, of wanting to teach people about how to do these things themselves if they would like to, and all of that, comes from my other theater vocation, you know, my other job in theater. There's a really, I just feel that some of my general intuitive tendencies might have really been cultivated by theater. There's a very interesting rule of improvisation, if you do improvisational acting, that's called the rule of yes and.
I love it.
Which means, which means that, you know, to give a really silly example, if your your acting partner says, "Oh my God, behind you is a giant elephant," instead of saying, "No, there's not," which doesn't really forward the action at all,
right,
it's saying, "Yes, Anne, and I can feel his breath on my neck," you know, which forwards the story. You know, it's an automatic acceptance. So whenever something crosses my path, you know, I try to treat it with a spirit of yes and. Yes, this is my reality, and
wonderful.
What is a step that, you know, I can take? So when I discovered soap nuts, or when I stumbled on the no shampoo, like, those were just yes and moments. Or when I was telling people about, you know, the different products, and they said, "Well, you should start selling them." I was like, "Okay, yes, and." So
and?
Here's a little menu.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, here's a little menu of my products. And then somebody saw that, and they were like, "I sell on Etsy. You should totally sell on Etsy." And I said to myself, "Yes, and I'll see what that's like." You know, so it is a really, you know, it is really taking that theatrical tenet and trying. It's a very holistic approach if you apply it, you know, just to your life in general. But coming down the path, I think in a more literal way. I'm going to be working on a project that with a colleague of mine who's about to get her yoga teaching certification, where we're going to marry yoga and the use of aromatherapy oils. I'm currently developing an oil for each chakra. I'm going to marry that to the writing exercises.
Oh, my gosh.
That I use, to work with various populations. Yeah, so it's going to be a literal intersection coming down the road of these two paths. So I'm really excited and interested to see where that leads.
That's wonderful. One of the hats that I wear is I do intuitive counseling for people, and I'm just so excited about this Yes, and idea, because I think people become afraid of their own, what's going on inside themselves, and that telling that story and moving that story forward and having that immediate yes is such an important piece of understanding all the different parts of ourselves and allowing all of them to speak. And so I'm just really excited to do this yes and next week with my clients.
Oh, absolutely.
Totally.
You know, when you say yes, you just, you know, it's acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to like it, but it's just accepting that in the present moment, this is what exists, whether, you know, you missed the bus or you broke your favorite necklace or whatever it is, you know. So it's saying yes to that reality and just letting that reality settle in yourself and then saying, so what might that mean, and sort of just moving yourself forward.
Where can I go from
through
there?
Exactly. It helps you a little bit,
wonderful.
You know, through the wallowing or the sadness or the anger or whatever might happen if you just didn't have that little kicker to just push you forward.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, we've just got a very few more minutes, but I want you to be able to give all your information out about where to get these wonderful products, how to connect with this program. This would be the time.
Okay, wonderful. You can certainly follow me on Facebook. That's where I'm the most talkative at the current time, simply because it's very easy to do fast sharing on Facebook. So there you can follow me at A Step in the Natural Direction.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a Twitter where I'm far less talkative. That's called A Natural Step. I also have a website, which is astepinthenaturaldirection.com, where I do periodic longer sharings in blog post form. And then my Etsy is The Natural Direction, and that's where you can find all my various products.
Awesome. Awesome. And what is the name of that program, the program that you teach kids to write plays into?
That program is called Philadelphia Young Playwrights.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing the hour with us. It was really, really a lot of fun, and I've got some takeaways, and I hope that the listening audience does too. And thanks for your insight and wisdom and inspiration.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation. This is a wonderful conversation. So happy
to do it.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Take good care, Mindy.
You too.
Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Whatever you do between now and next week, go and make magic, inspire magic, feel magic, create magic, connect, bridge with magic in your life and in your deep self. Thanks so much for listening. Take care of everybody. Okay, bye now.